everyone. Welcome all. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 29. Step right up. Step right up. Here we are. Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com, or you can check us out on Facebook under The Portal. Here we are, episode number 29. I am your host, The Brant, and with me, as always, is...
your co-host, Brian.
And we are excited. We have two special guests with us here from the Dice Tower. Why don't you gentlemen introduce yourselves?
My name is Eric Summerer.
And I'm Tom Vassell, host of the Dice Tower and many, many videos on YouTube.
Nice, yeah. So we're excited to have them here. They're here for our Dice Tower Invades Connecticut event. So they were gracious enough to give us some time here to record on our podcast. So thank you guys.
So far the invasion's been going well, I think.
Well, that's because we had a fifth element. You live here.
Yes, well, yeah, that helps.
No one ever suspected. In fact, we've met a few people already who are like, oh, so what do you think of Connecticut, Eric?
Well, how was your flight? Well, non-existent. Thank you. Yeah, it's about 45 minutes from home. So, I've been up here a few times with the kids, but nothing for a large event like this. So it's neat to see so many people. When I came before, there were like two people sitting in the corner playing a war game, and they didn't really want to talk to me. But now there's lots of friendly people here.
Nice. Awesome. So you guys are having a good time?
Yes. Yes. Well, we've been here.
It's less than a day,
hours,
but yes.
So far, yes.
That's 24 hours.
Come back later and find out the real story.
Yeah. Still time to ruin that.
Yeah, we can mess that up real good. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this episode is entitled "The Circle Is Now Complete."
That's cryptic.
It's from Lord of the Rings. They're talking about ring.
They're talking about the ring.
Excellent.
The circle's complete. You have to throw it into Mount Doom when it's done.
And but we're excited. We have a pretty big announcement here to make on the podcast, which is we are joining the Dice Tower Network. So we're really excited about that. In fact, Eric, if you would.
You want to do the intro?
Did we talk about this?
I don't know. They're just pressuring us into it now.
Okay, this is how this works.
You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Find out more at DiceTowerNetwork.com.
Do you know that Eric recorded those in 2012?
I did.
Nice.
Some of them.
We probably should update them.
We have updated them. I mean, just a few months ago.
The Dropbox folder is not updated.
Is it?
I was looking at it the other day. I was like, huh, we have not recorded these for a while.
Yeah, I think they all went up on Facebook that time. I did a Facebook thread and said, hey, anybody in the network, write down a comment and I will read it on a particular day. And I did, and I just read through a bunch of gibberish nonsense and just said, here you go, everybody. Do with it what you
like
will.
It's just like that Honest Movie Trailers where the guy at the end reads whatever people send in.
Oh, right, all the backers. Yeah, yes. It's similar, yes.
Nice.
So now that you guys are new, you might have to put in some suggestions and get me to read ridiculous
things. I think
we're
totally co-opting them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so excited for us. We're excited to join the Dice Tower Network. I think our unique spin is being a podcast with a store related to it. So for people who haven't listened to us before, welcome. And just find out more about our store. And if you're ever in the New England, Connecticut, Hartford area specifically, stop on by. We'd love to say hi and talk to
Actually,
people.
Actually, when you stop by, though, you should also check out the toy store.
The toy store across the street, which is the Time Machine.
It's really cool.
It's lovely. We just took a tour. I've been years ago and back when the board games were over there, and it was neat then, but now, I mean, the model train setup and the kids' games and the toys and the railroad stuff, it's just amazing.
Yeah, I think you guys should do a crossover between the model railroads and let the 40K gamers play there one time using that as their terrain.
Can you imagine? That would be awesome.
Not for the train. The train gamers would be sitting there tearing their hair out
please,
the whole time.
But then they could start up the trains and knock over the minis.
Right, the trains are running. So your turn is you got to get
gotta
these guys across
this
the
thing
track.
Gets around.
That's how you keep them moving. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That would be fun.
I'm just saying.
Are there 40K rules for scaling a quarry?
Maybe.
There's probably 40K rules for everything.
This old-timey five and dime has special armor rules.
Awesome. Well, as part of our joining Dice Tower Network, we want to do a giveaway for people. So we are giving away a little game called Welcome to the Dungeon, which people may have heard of.
Do we have to say it like that?
Yeah, every time.
Welcome to the Dungeon.
I've done it, and I've been told to stop.
You got a cease and desist.
It's still new to me.
So what we want you to do to enter the contest is just email us. It's portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. And put the title of the episode, The Circle Is Now Complete, in the body there, and you'll be entered into the contest to win Welcome to the Dungeon. Unfortunately, we are going to cap this. It's going to be the 48 continental states for making our shipping a little easier.
Sorry, so. Alaskans.
Yes, yes, we are sorry to our one Alaskan listener. So
just to Alaska, you're not apologizing.
The rest of the world.
No, Hawaii, they get to live in Hawaii.
Right, exactly.
It's not so
feeling
bad.
That bad for them.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Northern Lights, though. That would be fun. Okay, fine. All
right. Never mind, Alaska. We retract our apology.
No apology for you.
Awesome. So, yeah, we're giving away that game, Welcome to the Dungeon. I believe that has a Dice Tower stamp of excellence.
Yeah, I really like it. It's in my top 100 games. Barely, but I mean, it's
spoiler.
It's well, by the time this posts, my top 100 starts next week. But wow. The one of the things I like about it is just it's so easy to play. It's a push your luck game. I think did I just talk about this?
We
in
did,
our episode
yes,
coming
yes,
out
indeed.
Next week.
In Tuesday's episode.
No, we just posted this. I'm confused.
Wow, time travel's hard.
You talked about it at one point in the past.
But anyway, I do like Welcome Dungeon. I'm very much looking forward. There's a sequel coming out, Welcome Back to the Dungeon.
Yeah.
Which is basically completely compatible. So
yeah. Awesome.
No, that looks fun. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I love just thoroughly messing with people's heads. Like people are trying to calculate and they're like, oh, I'll remove the sword that gets rid of the dragon. People, I'm out, everybody.
I don't calculate, we just play.
Gotcha. Nice. Awesome. So you can check that out. All right, let's move on to What's on Your Table, so segment where we talk about games that we've been playing recently. So we're going to kick it off with Tom.
I couldn't decide whether to do a good game or a bad game.
Bad game.
I'll do both real quick.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's
the good game is Masters of Orion, the board game. Now, I don't know if you've ever played Masters of Orion, the computer game.
No.
Nope.
Oh, you all sick of me. All right. Well, some listeners who have played this amazing game, which is one of the greatest computer games ever made, it was essentially Civilization in Space. Going through and finding aliens. And you can find all that in the computer game. Now, this board game, on the other hand, is just it's from Hobby World. It's a very solid style game, though. And what you're doing in this game is you're going to have cards, and you're trying to play you have different resources. And you're playing cards, and you can play them for different ways. You can discard the card to get some resources. You can play a card for a building, which gives you a special ability, and also will give you more resources each turn. You can attack other players, but attacking is a very minor inconvenience for the other player, but is a way for you to get victory points. So all that works together in a really smooth way. I put it in the same category I put Race for the Galaxy. It's not as complex, but there's a big deck of cards, and there's all different things that you can do, and each game will be different. Each person has their own player power. We're talking hour game. I'm very impressed with it. Component-wise, I'm sure we'll see it reprinted with better components as time goes by. Also, I may have had a prototype copy. The fact that I'm not sure...
It's hard to tell sometimes.
...tells you that the component quality may not be amazing. But I really did enjoy the game. I don't know if it's exactly Masters of Orion, the board game, like if you played the computer game. But I like the game anyway. So
nice.
Oh, the bad game.
Bad game.
Thiamaki is a game that's out. It's from a Polish company. I believe they're called Historical Games Factory or company, something like that. And it was co-published in America by the Peterson Games. They made Cthulhu Wars.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In this game, you have a pantheon of gods. And these, you might have Apollo, or you might have Cthulhu, or you might have – I'm running out of gods' names. But there's different – you know, the Greek gods, Roman gods. So Thor is in the game.
Gotcha.
So what the designers of this game did, I think, was they played poker. And they said, poker's a cool game. How can we make it more complex? Let's combine it with a deck builder. So in this game, yes, I know. You have the beautiful card. You pick your pantheon. You'll pick one god from this pantheon, and that one gives you special abilities. You then have a starting deck of cards, like a deck builder, except you're supposed to draft these. So there's a whole round of drafting your starting hand.
Okay.
You then have this hand of cards. And there is multiple decks on the table. So if you're going through a turn, the first thing you do is, can you buy a special card from your pantheon? So if you are Apollo, maybe you can buy Ares or something. You can't because you don't have any of those tokens. But you might get them later on, maybe. Then we turn over. There's five cards put on the table, and I forget what this deck is called. But they show different colors, these cards, and different orbs, chaos orbs and order orbs. And then players will start bidding, and you're bidding followers and priests and different things, and you are bidding like in poker. You only see three of these five cards, and you can play cards from your hand, but these cards can only be played if they match the colors and or number of orbs that are shown. You can also play more of these color and orb cards from your hand so that you can get these cards. And these cards will do all sorts of weird things. And so you go around and you keep bidding, and you can raise and you can fold. If you fold, you then have the pleasure of sitting there for the next 10, 15 minutes watching everybody else play. So everybody goes around, and once everybody has – forgive me, I'm not toilet my poker terms. Once everybody has kind of passed and or fold it, then you flip over one of the two face-down cards. Now you know some more information about these color cards and orbs and garbage. And you do that again and then again, and you flip over all five cards. Then each player will play more cards from their hand that are attack cards. Whoever has the highest attack will win the hand. That attack is added to all the followers that you bid.
Got it.
The highest attack wins. They get to keep all their followers and get one more, and then everyone else loses their followers. If you lose all your followers, you're out of the game. There's actually player elimination.
Player elimination.
That sounds
otherwise, you then all get to pick a card from the middle of the table like Ascension. So it's kind of like Ascension if you slowed it down 30 times in a row.
Wow.
And then you continue on. I did not throw the game across the room, but I'm telling you, it was only by the fact that we had some new people in our gaming group that were playing this, and I didn't want to scare them off. But this is the worst game I played all year. That's from an established publisher.
Wow.
Was there anyone that did enjoy it?
No.
Okay. So it's not even – no saving grace there.
It's random as all get out. You have to check my power of my character plus the power of anyone else I haven't played plus these cards. Can I play these cards? Do the colors match? Do the orbs match? All that. Oh, we're also playing poker. Oh, and I need to – yeah, wow.
Well, granted, poker has player elimination, too.
Poker does have player elimination, but I'm not here necessarily to defend poker.
Okay.
And poker, if you're playing it for fun, it's not really player elimination. You just play someone's out, essentially.
Right.
Poker is not a fun game to play. People play it, I think, to get money.
Right.
But there was a game called Pedante, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Pandante. Mm-hmm. From Sterling Games, where they said, we're going to take poker and make it complex. And I don't like it because of that. Mm-hmm. Poker's good, the simplicity of it. I think the makers of this game played Pandante and said, that's just so simple. What is garbage. And they went, yeah, don't get it. It comes in actually different boxes with different gods and stuff. And it looks really cool.
Wow. Right.
It's not.
What was the name of that terrible game again?
Thiamaki. I give it a 2.
So we won't be stocking that. If you want to pre-order it, you can call us.
Some people will buy it, though, because the artwork, it was like the gold foil artwork, the pictures. The card design is pretty bad. It's hard to read everything going on. But I think some people will buy it because it looks cool. And also Peterson Games has a pretty strong following after Cthulhu Wars, and they got another one coming up. I think it's called Pantheon, War of Gods or something. So those, their miniatures, they'll sell well.
Yeah.
This should die on the vine.
Okay.
Follow that, Summer.
Well, I got to play the new Uwe Rosenberg game last night.
That is a good follow-up.
Yes. This is coming up from Z-Man Games. It's called A Feast for Odin, and it is a big box. Think of the Agricola box and sort of maybe double it in height, I want to say.
Almost.
It's very, like, it's sitting on the table. It's very tall. It has two trays inside with a ton of little tokens. It is a worker placement game, much like many of Rosenberg's games. You are a Viking tribe, and you're trying to earn glory by doing all sorts of stuff. And I mean all sorts of stuff, because the action selection board in this game is full of, what is it, like 60 different spaces?
60 different spaces, and each space gives you multiple things you can do with that space.
It's large. And there's four columns on this action selection board. And the first column you can activate with a single worker. The second column, you have to place two workers if you want to do that. Then 3 and 4. And the 3 and 4 is give you like extra bonuses just for being that expensive. You get to either draw a card or play a card as a bonus. And as you spend more guys, it's more powerful actions, which is pretty cool. But at the beginning, you only have 6 workers. You will get one new one each round. The game goes 7 rounds, and you'll gradually get more workers into your group and can do that. You've got a ton of different resources. There's wood, there's stone, there's ore cubes, there's money, and you're translating all of these things into other stuff. There are ships you can build. You can get fishing ships, whaling ships. You can go hunting. It's a push your luck sort of thing with the hunting. You've got weapons that you have to use and spend, and maybe you get a lucky hunt and get a bunch of stuff. Eventually, you're collecting all of these tiles that are varying sizes, and also four different levels of tile. You got yellow tiles and red tiles and green tiles and blue tiles, and they all have different rules about how they can be placed and used. You use them to feed your people. You use them to cover spaces on this big board that eventually will prevent you from losing a bunch of points and score you points at the end of the game. That sounds complicated, and it is. It's very complicated, almost to the point of being dizzying when you first look at it. There are so many options. Eventually, as you start to grasp it and start to just do it, you have to just jump in and start pushing buttons to see what happens in this game. A second playthrough, I think, will certainly bring out some strategies. Mm-hmm. You can buy extra islands to try and populate and cover with those tiles, but you don't even want to worry about that until you figure out how to cover your basic starting map. I liked it, but it is incredibly complex. This is not one you want to bring out with anybody who does not like heavy games, because you will shut down.
Now, you've played many of the Rosenberg games.
Yes.
Where would you rank this?
This is top of the complexity scale. I have not played Caverna.
Okay,
if that one is more complex.
You should leave, actually. I mean, come on now. Caverna? You haven't played Caverna?
No one I know has it, and I haven't. I have Agricola. I don't feel the need to buy it.
What about Punishing?
As far as
Uwe goes.
Or like the feed your people thing?
Yeah, feed your people, everyone starves.
The feed your people is actually easier. You still have to feed your people, yes, but there's more ways to mitigate that.
Mm-hmm.
You can use a lot of different things. It has the animal breeding mechanism, sort of like Agricola, but in a little bit of slow motion. But if you're really in a pinch, you can take that sheep that you've been using for breeding and, well, you can eat that now. Here you go,
you poor
people.
Did anybody get a -3 token?
No one did.
I didn't think so, yeah. It's really not hard to feed your people in this game.
Yeah, there's lots of options. That's like the least of your worries.
Gotcha.
It's much more all of the negative -1 point spaces on your board that you're desperately trying to cover. But there's all sorts of placement rules about these tokens, and it's a lot.
What was your final score? Do you remember?
79.
Yeah, which is pretty good.
And the winner
you start
was
with like -30.
Yeah.
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 So
I liked it. I don't know if it's one I'm going to personally buy. But I think my group would like it, and they're into those middleweight to heavyweight Euro games. Maybe I should pressure my game group leader to pick one up.
Who were you pointing at? Oh, is he
but,
here?
Oh, he's planning to be here later. I'm looking out the window to see if he's here yet.
So he's not here yet.
Not here yet. He wants to talk to Tom about some comments made about his pick list.
Take nothing back.
It was rather comical, though. You guys got here, arrived at the store like a little after 9, right? Somewhere in that vicinity last night. And then you hopped right in with a couple other people, and I think the general gist was we weren't expecting to play a 3-hour game with Arizona.
Well, yeah, Tom said, hey, Eric, you want to jump in on this 2-hour game? I said, 2-hour? Okay, I can do 2 hours. 3.5, 4 hours later, it's 1 a.m. and
I forgot Eric plays slowly.
Yeah, it's my fault.
Fair enough. But yeah, it looked fun. I want to pick that up, and hopefully it'll be coming to our shop soon. So
I hear Essen release on that.
That is what I think is the case.
Yeah.
Supposed to be at Origins.
Oh, well, okay.
That's the case with
a
lot
of boxes.
But, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I picked up a copy of Sealand by Ravensburger, and this has been going crazy because I think it was found really cheap on the internet somewhere, and the What Did You Play This Week podcast thing, everybody on there is talking about it.
It's definitely one you're going to have to spell out for people because there's like 3 ways you can do this.
Yes, it's Sealand.
Right, because it could be SEA. It could just be the letter C, land.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
kinds
yeah.
of things.
Yeah, and it's Wolfgang Kramer, and I can't remember who else he worked with on it. But the two of them made this game, and it's a pretty family-esque game. It does have another advanced set of rules, and it's an incredibly rich theme of Dutch countryside windmill farming.
Of course.
But I'm kind of getting sick of those games. We need more zombie games, you know?
Sorry, I was taking a drink.
I will come over the table.
And so anyway, it's a kind of unique kind of dual rondel system. You've got a rondel going around with the builder, and he's going around a track, and you can kind of pick the next hexagon tile that you want to choose, and you have a choice between gaining windmill tiles and gaining scenery tiles, I believe they're called, which are various types of flowers that you can put. And the whole board is made up of all sorts of hexes. And you either put a windmill tile down, and then you put one of your wooden wind meeples down on the space. or you can put a scenery tile down next to one of your windmills. And basically you're trying to fill in all the spaces around your windmill. When it's completely enclosed, you score the points that are on all those tiles, and they range from 0 to, say, 7, I believe. And you add up all the tiles that are in that area. You score that many points, and you get your windmill meeple back. And you have 4 of them, so you're kind of limited as to how far you can set yourself up. But basically, the whole thing becomes trying to put yours down near people so that they'll put a tile down to help you be able to score. So it's got that fun interaction. And then the second rondel is actually your money is just 5 coins laid out, and that's how far you can move the builder on the builder track. And you spend a coin for every space you move him forward. And then everybody's meeples are on that starting coin. You move up, and when somebody moves off the furthest back coin, it moves to the front, and now everybody has more money. So your money is always relative to your opponents. So if you move far, you spend a lot of money, and they only spend a little. Now you only have a little for your next turn, which is a pretty neat little mechanism they put in there.
When did this game come out?
2010.
Yeah, it's older.
Yeah,
it did not make a splash at all. I think I don't think it came to America, did it?
Not sure.
We had it here at the shop through Ravensburger, so.
Yeah, probably been around. So it was neat. I liked it. It was a fun family game. I'm really interested in playing with my wife and my daughter. My daughter's almost 7, so it seems like good to put her out. She's a great Ticket to Ride player, so I figure this is another move to get her going with basic Rondel. And I haven't tried that advanced set of rules, and I'd be interested. There's like some governors that you can place out. Also, you can flip the whole board, which is like one of those puzzle-style boards.
I do like flipping boards.
And you can flip the board, and the other side is a tactical game because there's certain spaces like land tiles that are face down in the regular game, but they're all face up on the board, so you know exactly where you're placing everything. So I had heard that one wasn't as good. I didn't try it yet, but that's Sealand, Wolfgang Kramer. I didn't hear who the co-designer was. That's
hang
right.
Hang on, well, no one in a second. Go ahead and find your game.
And, Gunther Burkhardt. There you go.
Oh, yeah, they've worked together before.
And, yeah, it was a pretty good game. It was fun.
All right. So, yeah, actually, before the Dice Tower crew arrived today, I got a chance to play Ticket to Ride, the United Kingdom map. You know, I hadn't gotten a chance to play that, and I felt like I'd been missing out on some aspects of it because I believe that won the best expansion in the Dice Tower Awards. Was that?
Yeah.
That was one of the ones that was up there?
It was nominated.
UK,
yeah.
I believe that one.
Yeah, it won the best
that
expansion.
One. And I was a little upset about that. I wanted Roll for the Galaxy to win, but that's a whole different story.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, the Roll for the Galaxy is a great, great game. Mm-hmm. The expansion's good. I don't think the expansion.
No, that makes it. That jumps it up to a whole other.
Dun,
I mean,
dun,
really? I mean, I like that. It, but I didn't feel like it changed the game that much. It gave a few extra dice.
Yeah, but I think the starting tiles, it adds a ton. I haven't used I don't like the goals. I don't like that part. But the starting tiles have made it, you know, they've made it leaps and bounds better.
Well, I think they're better, yeah. But anyway.
Well, no, because
how do you change your mind now that you played the UK map?
I need to play it again.
Right.
I needed to be blown out of the water by it,
and
I was not.
Oh,
It was really fun. I enjoyed it. I played just the UK. I didn't play Pennsylvania. So the UK side does add, technologies that you can
I forget
purchase.
What they're called, but it's essentially technology.
So, you know, you're starting off, and you're very limited. You can only build, you can only put your trains down on routes in, you know, a set, a small portion of the board, and you can only build on, one or two
roots.
Yeah. Thank you. So that's what you're kind of limited to. You have to spend some wild cards to purchase new technologies, which can allow you to build on other parts of the map, or build larger roots and that sort of stuff. And I don't think we threw in all the special technologies. So there's room for expansion there too. So I don't have a full. A full fleshed out idea of how this would compare to the Roll for the Galaxy expansion. But I guess I want to get back to that. I want to defend Roll for the Galaxy now more than.
I don't think you talked about Ticket to Ride at all there, hardly.
A little bit.
No, I know. I wanted to talk about Roll for the Galaxy to start because, I don't know, I really enjoy that. I've played, I think that's my favorite game of all time.
Whoa.
Really?
I believe Roll for the Galaxy.
He'll never tell me. I'm always like, what's your top 10 games? And he's now telling us his number one game.
That's what we do. We make everybody put them in.
You got to have everything on a list. What's your favorite? Who's your favorite person at the table right now?
But
Eric,
I think it's
number
just
three for me. No, that's pretty high up there. You're in the top ten.
We just don't know if that's before or after yourself.
And then that would leave one of us. In the
that's
blue
right.
That's not
I have
good.
Tie for number two.
So, but yeah, no, I really did enjoy Ticket to Ride, the UK side. I need to try Pennsylvania, but I'm still ingrained with Roll for the Galaxy ambition. I should have been talking about that instead, right?
I think you did.
I think
actually.
You did. Yeah, I think you got,
fair
you got
enough.
It in
the
there.
Show notes, you're going to have to.
I will that. Change that. Awesome. That's what's on our table. Let us know what's on yours. All right, so for our discussion topic this week, we thought it was pretty fitting to talk about gaming at a game store.
I'm for it.
All right. Excellent.
I'm opposed.
Good discussion. Counterpoint. why don't you guys tell us something about your experiences gaming at game stores?
Gaming at game stores is pretty much half of my gaming, I would say. I game at home. I game at friends' houses occasionally. But gaming at a game store, I've done it a lot. And we do it down in Florida. I've gamed at really good game stores, and I've gamed at the bottom, a game store that's from the Simpsons cartoon. It's a thing to do, right? That's a place to meet. When you're looking for a place to meet, you can find other meetups and other venues, but that's harder to do. A game store is already there.
Right.
So then it's an easier way to get it set up.
Plus, you can just buy a game and play it. You don't have to walk very far.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, the benefits of a game store are definitely that there are games there to buy. There is the chance that someone walking in will want to do that with you.
Mm-hmm.
Game stores will also, they're usually in locations that will draw people in. The people at the game store aren't going to look at you, why are you doing this?
Right, yes.
The disadvantage is that you're going to have to deal with other gamers. I don't mean other board gamers, but Magic the Gathering rules most game stores. So you're going to have to deal with Magic the Gathering. Warhammer 40K is in a lot of game stores. And so the events at game stores can interfere. Or then the other disadvantage, and this, of course, is not true of all game stores, included in one we're currently in, but many game stores don't keep their bathrooms clean.
It's true.
They do not enforce civility amongst the people who are in the store.
I'm looking at a code of conduct right here at the portal. I think there's probably respect your fellow gamers right there.
It says no drink on the table.
Oh man!
Wait, he has drink.
Similar. I totally understand the getting pushed out by some other groups of gamers. I went to Kalamazoo. I think I said I was looking forward to going to the game store in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and it was a lovely store, but they were doing a Magic release day. And there was no gaming space. I was expecting to maybe hang out for a few hours, play a few games, meet some people. There wasn't a single inch of table space that I could have sat down to do that. So there is that danger, at least if you don't plan ahead of something like that happening. But I've had also great experiences every time we visit Washington, D.C. We go to the Labyrinth down there, and my son has been able to jump in and do stuff and get to play with people that he wouldn't ordinarily get to play with. If you're visiting somewhere, you know you're going to likely find like-minded gamers at a game store, and it's an easy place to go at the drop of a hat to play something.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, it's been great to have people coming in off the, off the street. Like, a lot of people wander in here and they are saying, like, you know, they just got moved to the area, or they're new, so they're trying to get a sense of like what the gaming scene is like in Manchester. So it's really nice to have that as like a solid meetup place for those guys to come in, meet new people, and they branch off eventually. Like, people kind of rotate their own schedules and personal lives, affect what they can do to come out to our shop. But it's great just to have it as like a central area where people know they can come and find like-minded, gamers and such. So, along with that, we can run some larger scale events. Like, it's great to have you guys here, and people can come here, and they know, you know, there's going to be gaming going on. We've got a great meetup group that meets twice a week, mm-hmm. typically, and they attract a bunch of people, and it just is self-sufficient now, so it's just great to see that. And, you know, it's all across the board, games that are like, you know, like party, social deduction style games, all the way up to like heavy Euros. So that's amazing. It's an avenue that we can run some like tournaments and stuff. It's tough to get people to commit to that, but it's still a good thing that we can have happen occasionally. Some larger scale events, like we've been doing some gaming marathons, you know, like 24-hour events, like International Tabletop Day. This is, you know, packed on that day. And then we also have another one end of the year where it's focused on Extra Life as that gaming marathon style thing. So people are coming in and playing games that whole day, basically. So I don't know. I like it as that central meeting place. And obviously, like, we still game at our houses and other places as well. It's not like the store is the only place that we play, but it's just a great way to meet new people and just, you know, continue to develop your own gaming knowledge and such.
Now, I'm looking out at the gaming space. There's a good amount of space here in the store, here at the Portal. How did you arrive at your policy for gaming in the store? I know some stores charge for open gaming. Some stores only allow it at certain times.
Yeah.
What was the discussion in how you decided how the policy was going to work here?
Yeah, I mean, that had been going back a while. It used to be, so our gaming space used to be across the street in that older style building. So it was in a basement, which wasn't well lit, wasn't well ventilated, all that sort of stuff. And it was really kind of an afterthought, but it was giving people an avenue to come down and play games. But then again, like we found this space, this was available to us, and we brought the gaming space over here because it felt like an area of growth. And I think we've seen that too, just being in this location. When we brought it over here, we did have that discussion. We were trying to figure out, you know, does it make sense to get people to, you know, to pay to enter the place, or how do we want to get people to, you know, contribute to the community, contribute to the shop and help out that way. But we decided, just with like all the different competitors out there, we wanted to have this as an avenue for, like, you know, families to come down. We didn't want just, you know, we wanted a kid to be able to come in after school or something, hop in and play some games or stuff like that. You know, and we had started off as like a toy and hobby shop, so it was kind of in that same line where it's not trying to be restrictive. We're not trying to like not allow people to come in.
Right.
So I guess that's kind of where that's coming from. Obviously, we hope people will, you know, buy games here, but we understand like it's often cheaper to get it online, and that's just the nature of it. Like, people are definitely more aware of, like, people can find information a lot easier now. Like, the internet has really driven it to a whole different business plan. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's tough to keep up with that, but I think the community kind of speaks for it. And even the way, like you guys run your Kickstarter, right? And you've got promos and all that sort of stuff, and people are purchasing those in the sense that they're donating to you guys, in a sense, and getting something in return. We try to work with people. Like, there are some clubs and like school groups will offer like discounts for that sort of stuff as well, but we just want to be open to people coming in and playing.
Yeah, and I'll give credit to the store, because I guess I work here. I kind of work here and I don't work here, but when this space first opened, the first day this was officially open, Brian kind of hired me, brought me in, and had me going. And from the beginning, it's always been, Brant, we want you to focus on the community. I'm not going to teach you the register. You're not shelving games. You're not cleaning bathrooms. You're not doing that stuff. You are the community. We want you to demo games, talk to people, help people find games. It's always been that, and I think that's been huge, including, I think, a big part that any modern good game store needs to have, which is a board game library, and really I think it was mostly Brian's idea, but I really tried to really forward that and get it organized and get a space for it. And so that's really what I've been doing almost all the time that I work, and now helping to do the podcast to get information out. And so I think that's been big. I think having the library and things like that for people to feel like they could come in and play is a really good piece. So
if you're listening to this and you wanted to get more involved in your game store, I think there's some policies you should follow. One, you should definitely talk to the manager. Get on the same page as them. Not all managers are board gamers. In fact, I would say most managers I've met are Magic players. Mm-hmm. Or occasionally not a gamer at all. They just run a game store. But usually they're some sort of gamer. And getting on the same page and working with them, they'll like that. Some game stores charge. Some don't. If they charge, pay it, for crying out loud. If they don't, buy stuff from them every once in a while. And, you know, respect the store. You know, realize Magic brings a lot of money in the store. So if there's a Magic event, be happy. That's allowing you to play there when there's not a Magic event. Then for store owners, though, you have to make people want to pay. Mm-hmm. You know, there's stores that I go to and I'll look at the prices and it's a little more expensive than it is online, but I'll pay because they're letting me play there and I like these guys. There's other people, they complain to me. I'm like, why should I give you my money? You need to make me feel guilty. Like, I go online, I'm like, yeah, I'm buying it online. I feel guilty about this. I should feel guilty because the store is that nice to me and I want to build my community.
Yeah.
So I think there's both need to work on it.
Plus, I think when you add in, like, shipping costs, you're going to be looking at relatively simple. Like, if you're just looking to buy, like, a $50 game, you know, most online sites aren't offering, like, free shipping at that level, right? So, I mean, if you're looking at getting something like that, you're probably pretty close to what we're looking at for, like, what we're selling the game at, too. Mm-hmm.
I just look at it as like a fee that I'm giving the store. Right. Hey, I buy this game. Oh, yeah, it's $5-$10 more. Mm-hmm. But, hey, they let me game here.
Yeah.
So that's worth it for me.
Yeah.
Going to see one movie costs that much. Easy.
Yeah. But if you're looking online, a lot of people see it like, oh, there's a $50 game at $40 or something, right? And then they don't even consider the shipping. It's going to equal, like, it's about $10 anyway. And it's like, oh, hey, but I'm paying $40 for a $50 game.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, I think the other piece for me for gaming at a game store that's big, too, is people. Like, I love people. So for some people, that's going to be a barrier. And like Tom was saying, you know, you're going to have to deal with difficult people if you go to a public place, you know, at times. But I just love playing games with people. To me, that's what gaming is about. I could play a video game and play on my own, but I play board games so I can play with someone else. Most of the time, I do play some solo games. So I can't say that all the time. But I was just at a funeral recently. I was doing music there, and the guy loved golf, and everything was about golf. And it was great. It was a great funeral service and everything. But I came home, and I said to my wife, okay, my funeral cannot just be talking about how he liked board games. You have to make a connection that I liked board games because I liked being with people. Okay. And Brian's been to my house when I invite way too many people to a board game night, and now you have the, what do we do with 11 people? Because I just want to have more and more people over, and gaming's about people to me, and playing in a store is that opportunity to do that. I have to be careful about the games I pick. I've been in a room that's too loud trying to play a game that's too heavy, that's hurting my brain, you know, and so you have to be careful what you're doing. But, you know, playing with people is really important to me, and that's, you know, that's the piece that I hope people always remember, you know, that I love playing with people. I mean, your podcast, right, you guys, or the whole Dice Tower is, and the people who play them.
Yeah.
And that's a huge part to me.
Especially
the people who play them. And that's huge to me. I mean, that's what I love about board gaming, is playing with other people, teaching other people, bringing people into the hobby, bringing a new game to somebody. And they go, oh, my gosh, I can borrow this? Like, families now, you know. I just had a mom with her two daughters. She's a single mom. I gave them Pandemic, you know, and they're bringing it home, cracking it open for the first time. And I just get joy talking about that right now. And I'm not even with them playing the game. So I think that's a cool aspect. Awesome. Sounds good. That's what we love about gaming in a game store. All right, not too long here, but I thought it'd be fun for our What We Love About ... segment to do a little bit about podcasts and podcasting, since...
I don't.
I do.
Counterpoint.
Wait.
I actually hate this.
Because obviously you guys do video stuff too. Not as much Eric.
I introduce all of the videos.
That's true.
Every single one. I don't think you realize that. I do that intro every time.
So what's
live every time.
That's right. He phones me up and I say, and now it's time for another Dice Tower review.
So what's unique to podcasts and podcasting that just allow for a different avenue, you think?
Well, to be fair, I do like video better than podcasting.
because I like to be able to use my expressions on my face, which you can't do audio, and you have to constantly. Well, but people can't see.
People
them.
Can hear when you're smiling, Tom.
Possibly.
When you're
am
smiling.
Am I smiling now? But what I like about podcasting, I think, is I personally like talking more than writing. Some people can write their way out of a jail sentence. You know, they're just beautiful prose that people can put on paper. But I've always liked to be able to talk, to like show your anger. And I don't know, I've always got, and I like back and forth a lot, which writing just does not do as snappily.
Yeah, okay. I love the reach of podcasting. I was a radio fan. I was in radio for a while. I interned at a radio station. In fact, I had my favorite morning radio DJs, and I would call into their show as much as I could. I'd listen to them every morning, and whenever something would come up and I'd want to talk to them about it, I'd call them up. I eventually interned for them. They took me bowling with Weird Al.
He would stop calling them.
Yes, yes, please stop. And I always loved how you've got something going on in a little room. We're in a room here at the portal, just talking, the four of us.
Right.
But we're now having a personal connection with whoever is listening to this show. We're in their car. We're in their earphones. We're in their iPod. And talking to one person, a cluster of people, it's a weird personal connection that we get to have in the context of having just a conversation in a booth or in a room somewhere. It's rare that we get to actually interact with our audience in person at like our live shows, which is a very different experience to just talking to Tom on the phone for a few hours.
I will say I do like the live stuff better.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's different for sure.
I like interacting with an audience.
But I do like that we can be having a conversation and someone halfway across the globe will listen to that.
Yeah.
And then we'll make a connection. And then when we get to meet them at, say, Essen coming up in a few weeks, they will come up and say, that thing you guys talked about a month ago.
You're wrong.
You're wrong. Or Tom's wrong. Don't tell him.
Wait, how often does that say?
It's all the time. So we get to make that connection with people we don't even know yet. That's really cool. And podcasting allows the reach of that radio connection to be worldwide. I just think that's fascinating. That's really cool.
Top that.
Yeah.
It's scary, though. People really hold you to what you say.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm like, it's definitely that. Like, you can't forget something that you mentioned, like, way back when.
I made a mistake doing a Tale of Horror an episode or two ago, and people are still talking. I can't believe Eric messed up doing a Tale of Horror.
I'm thrilled because it's not just me.
It drives me nuts.
But, and it was Tuesday.
Yeah.
But one of the, you know, when we talk about this podcasting, too, is I'm still a strong believer in being yourself on a podcast. Mm. But a thing I like about podcasts is I get to talk about my opinions, which is something I like to do anyway. But now I don't have to tell 20 different people. It's like
right.
I can tell everybody at one time. And then people come back and give me feedback. And I love that. I love not arguments, but I like hearty discussions, I guess.
Yeah.
I like to hear that sort of thing. I find that something fascinating. And podcasting lets us start that.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. I love a good debate, as long as both parties know we're just debating. This is the goal to get to. But yeah, you definitely stole mine from me there, Tom, just that idea of getting to talk over write. I mean, I'm just a talker. If you are within my walking vicinity, I won't call you on the phone. I will walk over to you to talk to you, because that's just how I am. I teach at a school, and teachers are always like, why didn't you just call me on the phone? I'm like, I don't know, because why didn't I just talk to you face-to-face? So I like that piece and being able to do that. And, of course, versus radio, podcasting, what's nice now with technology is that this is recorded and saved for people, and they could do it on their own time. So you have people that are driving home from the midnight shift, and they're listening to you.
The time-shifting aspect.
Yeah, you have people that, hey, that podcast better be ready to go for me at 6 a.m. when I get in my car tomorrow morning, or on the train or whatever it is, and they're ready to go to listen to that. And that way that it can almost traverse time, that they can have you with them. And, you know, versus video, where we got phones now, so it's easier. But, you know, in terms of having a podcast and downloading it, having that, I do that a lot in the car rides and stuff. So I like that element and being able to convey information to people. It's just it's a very friendly, personal way to convey information in terms of, like, the store. So
yeah. And even along with all that, it's helped me think about games in a different way. Like, it's really helped me kind of segment stuff off and really think of stuff in a structured way. Like, you know, even trying to, like, describe something, now I have to give a brief overview. Like, I have to almost give a sales pitch in a sense. Whereas before, you know, before trying to talk about it in front of, like, for the podcast, it was really just kind of a long ramble of whatever I thought about at the time. But now it's like I need to have that progression of, you know, this is what the theme is, like what the game kind of does, like a brief overview. And it really gives me that structure too. So.
And I know on our podcast, people love it because if you listen to a typical Brian Brandt conversation, it is 92% Brandt, 8% Brian. But on the podcast, you actually get 40 to 50% Brian, which is nice.
That's because you guys can't see what's going on. There's actually duct tape involved for part of this.
Yeah. Yeah, so I like to talk a lot. So there's that element. But awesome. So that's what we love about podcasts and podcasting. Let us know what you love. All right, that's it.
That's
episode
it?
29
Can
in
you
the
guys
books.
Please let us out of these chains.
There it is. The circle is now complete. So thank you very much, Tom. Thank you very much, Eric. We are excited to be proud members of the Dice Tower Network. So don't forget our contest
stay proud.
There. That's right. We will stay proud. And thanks everybody for listening. As always, I'm your host, The Brant.
I'm your host, Brian.
My name is Tom Basler.
I'm Eric Summerer.
Awesome. You've been listening to Portal Gaming Podcast, and we hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on September 16, 2016. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.